stocks are trading higher following the release of the April jobs report today. The Labor Department says the U.S. economy added 164,000 jobs last month.
We've created 3.2 million jobs, unthought of. If we would have said that 3 years ago during the campaign, people would have said, what a horrible exaggeration. That's so terrible. They wouldn't have believed it. 3.2 million.
While the unemployment rate dropped below 4% for the first time in 18 years.
The unemployment rate, you saw that just today, just fell beneath 4% for the first time since the beginning of this century. You know, I heard it was about 19 years. I said, wait a minute. The beginning of the century sounds better. So I say, the beginning of the century.
The unemployment rate is under 4%. That's the lowest level since 2000, actually, going back to Bill Clinton.
This is what we call Goldilocks numbers. They were just right. They showed a lot of growth, but not so much growth that we're worried about the Fed accelerating their policy.
What's not to like?
This is the Financial Sense News Hour. Now, here's the Financial Sense News team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Another mixed week for the markets, and it had trouble digesting whether it's trade with China, a rise in interest rates. Will the Fed raise interest rates three or four times as the Fed met this week? A lot of big questions the market will have to face in the quarters ahead. Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to this week's edition of the Financial Sense News Hour. Joining me in Hour 1 will be Bullseye Craig Johnson from Piper Jaffray. He says we still have a lot of more consolidation to go in this market, and he's troubled by the FANG stocks, that these earnings that have come out, which have blown expectations, has not been much help other than maybe Apple, which announced that Warren Buffett just took a position of 75 million additional shares. He thinks we could get down to 2350. His theme for the year is a hop, drop, and then a pop. We had the hop at the beginning of the year. We're going through the drop, as Craig believes now, and then at the end of the year, another pop into year end. He especially likes the energy sector. You want to hear why. Also joining me on the program will be Frank Holmes as we take a look at the gold market. And it's amazing as he talks about basically the discovery process. Well, there's been a dearth of discovery in the gold markets, which means companies are going to have to shop on Wall Street if they want to replace their reserves. He thinks we're in a weak period seasonality-wise for gold, and he sees an upturn coming. He'll be joining us in that hour, and also Ryan Poplava on what moved the markets this week. All of that coming up in Hour 1.
And I'm John Loeffler, and on the seventh hour of the financial, oh, I guess we don't run that long. Anyway, on the big picture today here on the program, you know, I'm sure many of you have been listening to the program for a long time. We've spent a lot of time talking about the Federal Reserve, and there's a good reason. I mean, you well know that 11 of the last 12 recessions were preceded by Fed rate hikes. And one real sobering fact is that the demand for money now is no longer based on free market principles, and whether or not we have a recession or a bull or bear market quite often depends on what the Federal Reserve does with its prime lending rate and some of its other lending policy. So the Fed met this week, and we'll examine whether or not there were any significant changes and where we're headed throughout the rest of the year, three or four rate hikes. Also, we frequently cover major mega trends on the program. We're going to talk today about demographics and the migration between states. It's almost a mini civil war among states, an economic version, not a shooting war, obviously, whereby states that are making themselves economically attractive to people are attracting large numbers of immigrants to those states from the states which are what we would call fiscally or financially abusive. And that's one of the major mega trends that's facing us right now. And finally, Chris Sheridan and Jim Poplava will have a good conversation on the slowdown in the Chinese economy and the implications for the rest of the world. All of that coming up today on the Financial Sense News Hour. And first, one of my more interesting parts of the program, we go to Ryan Poplava to see what's going on? We delve into the comings and goings on Wall Street. So tell me, Ryan, what has led to what I guess we would call a wishy-washy series of returns this week in the market?
Yeah, John, the bulls continue to defend stocks really at the 200-day average and the February lows, like we also saw last week. It's been so far just a definitely a line in the sand. And then, of course, on the upside, there's been a real issue with the S&P 500, some of the other indices trying to get above their 50-day moving average. So a real fight right now between it, and that may have led to some of that wishy-washiness that you're kind of seeing. You know, the bulls are coming in at support at that 200-day average while the bears are keeping a lid on things, you know, at that 50-day moving average. So it's only a question of time. Beyond the technical workings kind of influencing traders and investors, earnings continue to be, John, just the paramount reason that has been the catalyst with individual companies, moving sectors, and sometimes the market in general. And we saw that this week with Apple's earnings and then a little bit of a stamp of approval from Warren Buffett talking about his 75 million share purchase. So it's been a technical week, but also earnings are still fully in the center of attention.
Yeah. Okay. So what specifically transpired this week in earnings that you think is worthy of highlight?
Well, no one company had any major influence this week in moving the averages around, and maybe that was really the point. But Apple was able to produce an upbeat quarterly report. There was concerns with Taiwan Semiconductor's earnings being weak earlier in the season, and that being a supplier for Apple, you know, there were some big concerns about the iPhone 10, especially not being able to meet expectations. But they beat on first quarter earnings, and they also raised their profit guidance for Q3, while essentially announcing a buyback of an additional $100 billion in stock and pushing for an increase of its dividend by like 16%. So in some ways, I think that's one of the problems here, really, that we've had a very strong earnings season and not a real strong response to that. It's fairly clear to me, John, that most companies that have reported since the tax bill have passed merely giving back the bonus that we've gotten from this tax bill. And of course, you know, things have been ramping up on manufacturing all leading up towards the end of the year. It wasn't just the tax bill, but essentially having this success, and instead of reinvesting it in new factories, new products, new markets, they're essentially just giving it back to the shareholders. So that's a one-time reward, as opposed to the forward value you're going to get from increasing production, opening up more stores, et cetera. So I think it echoes what many have come to kind of fear since the Caterpillar announcement on Q1 essentially being the high water mark. And sort of an answer to the question, is this as good as it gets?
Well, is it?
Maybe.
Maybe. Okay. I know you'd mentioned going into the earnings season that you really were concerned with some of the messages we had heard about input prices, labor costs going up from some companies in March, and whether revenues could keep up. So would you say the earnings season is more disappointing having heard from companies on these subjects now? I mean, why aren't investors rewarding one of the best earnings growth periods we've seen in 10 years?
It's an excellent question, and it keeps me pretty stumped, John, but I've been pulling together some of the quotes from some of the companies, and you know, we talked about Caterpillars here on the show, and I thought it would be maybe a good idea if we touched on the subject on earnings to kind of go through some of the things that they're saying. So looking at Caterpillar, of course, we already mentioned the high watermark of their profit margin being Q1, and essentially they do believe they're going to continue to do well throughout the rest of the year, but they did say maybe margins might be an issue. But here's something else they said that I didn't point out. For the balance of the year, we would expect material cost increases to be greater than price realization. They mentioned that on their show. Hasbro, higher freight expenses, something we are hearing consistently across many vendors, which they said are stemming from higher costs due to electronic logging devices and driver shortages. In fact, I was just talking to Rob Bernard, one of our colleagues here, has been on the show many times talking about fixed income. One of his clients has a trucking company, and they completely concurred that they think driver wages are going to really shoot up here, and that's one of their concerns for their business. And obviously, Hasbro here is echoing that. Stanley Black & Decker mentioned this in their report. When inflation is incremental and very modest but significant, it is somewhat difficult to get price in some of our markets because there hasn't been a whole lot of remodeling with homes going on right now ahead of a very, very strong real estate market. So they're saying that there's really no story for them right now in their products, and they're seeing essentially their profit margins get squeezed. Ingersoll Rand had this to say: material inflation across the industry and for Ingersoll Rand is both volatile and persistent and continues to be a headwind. So there you have it, John, on the inflationary side and compression side, they're essentially of margins, a major concern across industries, not just industry, which I pointed out here, but Hasbro's retail, Stanley Black & Decker's retail. And as I mentioned, all companies are doing well right now, but what are they doing with the success that they've had from the tax bill and some of the great growth we had in manufacturing in Q3 and Q4 last year? They're buying back stock and they're reducing their debt. And the debt reduction I mentioned in the first week of earnings when we talked about all the financials that were reporting, the biggest thing that was an issue there that investors had a real issue with was loan growth. So talking about, again, buybacks, listen to this. United Technologies: as a result of the U.S. tax reform, we repatriated $3.8 billion of overseas cash in the quarter. And guess what they did with it? They bought back stock. Honeywell: if you look back about our buyback trends, this level of buyback in Q1 is actually relatively aggressive. BlackRock: we also remained committed to returning excess cash flow to our shareholders. 15% increase to dividends and an additional $335 million in repurchases. So, John, there you have it. It's just a broken record. We're this far in the economic cycle, and I'm not so sure, even if companies could expand on their operations, maybe there was a whole lot of demand. At this far in the cycle, is it really wise to be reinvesting in more factories and more production capacity, more stores if you're retail, when, again, we're this pretty far in the cycle? Where is the stimulus for growth? Where is, like Stanley Black & Decker, where's the story for that extra growth? I don't know that it's translating with repatriation so much. And we've heard some companies, I think even Apple said they're building factories here in the US. Maybe that really is going on. But, you know, if you look at the responses here right now, the companies are just saying they're giving it back to the shareholder.
Yeah. Now, have you seen slow growth?
I haven't. But in some cases, definitely not slow growth, but has growth slowed maybe a little bit? This week's ISM reports for manufacturing and services both slowed from high levels. And we talked about this on the show ever since last half of last year, as we were approaching 60 on some of these indexes. But manufacturing declined to 57.3 from 59.3. So a 2-point drop there from high levels. You know, 59 is high. Services dropped to 56.8 from 58.8 in March. Now, we started to get some of the global PMI data, that's the Purchasing Managers Index data, and basically these surveys that tell us how well these regions are doing: Europe, the US, China. We get China's about once a month now. But essentially China, their Caixin PMI ticked up a bit in April to 52.3 from 51.8. I was actually starting to get a little concerned over the past few months that we might drop below 50. That essentially tells us that there's contraction in China. So that has been concerning me. So good to see a little bit of a tick up. Still a little nervous about China. The JP Morgan Global Manufacturing Services PMI. So this takes all the countries' input together. And that was up to 53.8 in April from 53.3. So half a point increase in April from March. And while not as high as last year, in the report I read, they believe that right now it currently is in line with estimates, with its goals and its long run trend. So growth has slowed a little bit. The jobs report recently this week, Friday, was the best the market could really ask for. It was good growth. About 164,000 jobs were added. Low growth in average hourly earnings, and that has been a concern since January. It has gone up, it's gone down, it's decelerated, it's accelerated, so it's been kind of wishy-washy, but overall, definitely wasn't a hot number, which, you know, if you look at the 10-year treasury up near 3%, that was going to be a concern going to this jobs report, so we didn't get that.
And let's face it, the Fed has really helped to keep those expectations tame as well. I mean, keeping rates flat this month with the meeting that they held earlier this week, Jim and I are going to talk about the big picture. I mean, it was a status quo meeting, but they did lay down the groundwork for a rate hike in June, which is next month.
Yep, pretty much to be expected if we're tracking previous rate hikes, doing 3 a year. You know, we do one in June and then maybe another one in December. Could do one in September if inflation numbers start to get a little hot. As I mentioned, some of these companies talked about freight shipping. So could be an issue. But, you know, expectations for 4 hikes. We'll take a look at that every now and then. And right now it shows that it's still relatively high, right around 37.7% chance that we get a hike 4 times this year by December. So it's come up a little bit, but in fact, recently just dropped on the jobs data, to be expected.
Yeah, pretty much so. All right. Well, thank you, Ron. I appreciate it. The earnings season should, I would guess, quiet down now. I guess the bulk of the S&P 500 companies have reported. But, you know, you never know. I mean, what could come next? Those moving averages seem to be the indicators we should be watching next week. One's going to break eventually. We know that. And it's going to be very, very important to those watching as to which one. So anyway, have a good weekend, Ryan Peplava. Really appreciate your time.
You too, John, and as it's this Friday, of course, May the 4th be with you this weekend.
And it took you how many hours to think that up, Ryan?
Oh, that was easy.
That one was easy, okay.
I'm a nerd, so. Call me a financial geek, call me a Star Wars nerd. I'm a child of the 80s.
Interesting, yeah. All right, I appreciate it, Ryan.
We'll see you, John.
What everyone wants? Everyone wants the ability to retire and live well. Sounds easy, but it isn't. It requires careful planning. That is something not everyone knows how to do, and you may need help to plan, implement, and monitor your progress, assessing where you are now and where you want to be in the future. That is where Financial Sense Advisors can help. And unlike many advisors who sell you products you don't need, at Financial Sense Advisors, we are fiduciaries, which means we put your interest first. We do well when you do well.
Call Financial Sense Advisors now and let us help you to make the change from just retiring to thriving in retirement. Call now, toll free, 888-486-3939. Again, that's 888-486-3939. Investment advisory services offered through Financial Sense Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. You know, Financial Sense NewsHour listeners should remember that our premium members are able to hear the weekday Financial Sense NewsHour featuring interviews with top economic commentators and experts. If you're not a member, here's one of the interviews you missed this week.
By 2019, I'm finally expecting to see a 20 to 30% correction in the S&P 500. If we break down below 2400 earlier rather than later and then follow below 2370, then I would have to assume that we are now in that 20 to 30% correction phase. And ultimately, I still see us going over 3000 under either of those scenarios. The real issue here that makes it so difficult is that we're in what we call an Elliott wave discussion, a fourth wave correction. And fourth waves are the most variable of the entire five-wave Elliott wave structure. That's why you often have to have a very open mind when you're moving through these corrections, because they take many, many different twists and turns.
Well, what started out to be a promising year for stock investors is turned into nothing more but volatility. Is it time to sell, get out of the market? Where are stocks heading? Joining us on the program is Craig Johnson from Piper Jaffray. Craig, let's start out with the market. I mean, you take a look at the first 2 or 3 weeks of the year, it looked like a continuation of a trend for 18 months prior, and it was looking pretty good. But since then, the stock market has had a lot of difficulty staying into positive territory. When it does enter it, it doesn't stay there very long. So what is that telling you?
I think what we're seeing in the market right now is we've had this year of very low volatility that you saw in 2017. This year starting off kind of along the lines of the hop, drop, and pop that we've been talking about, where we got some enthusiasm, it got too far ahead of itself in early part of the year, and now we're in this kind of correction phase and really a resetting of expectations. And Jim, I think that this is a setback that's probably going to take longer to run. I put it into the category of about 2/3 time, 1/3 price from my perspective, and likely the shakeout is going to cut deeper. And as I look at the charts and try to peer ahead, I would say that a corrective move back down toward 2325 to 2350 is becoming more likely.
So if we're looking at 2350, I want to talk about some other things that have been plaguing the market. Number one is something that we saw happen last week with the 10-year yield crossing over 3%, because up until that time, they were talking about maybe a possible yield curve inversion. You have that. And then also, Craig, you have something, the second year of a presidential term. We know we have midterm elections where, at least right now, the media is saying that the Democrats could retake the House and possibly impeach the president. So how much of those political fears, along with a rise in interest rates, is weighing on the market?
Well, Jim, it's kind of difficult to try to put a true expectation on the political fears. I mean, those have been out there for a while. I think more importantly, I think we're reaching a point in time with the market, you know, beyond the White House, beyond the midterm elections and these kind of things, that a lot of expectations has already been built into this tape. And when the quarterly earnings came out, we couldn't see some of the big leading stocks in the market really push ahead and make new highs. And so from my perspective, as you run into this overhead resistance, can't push ahead, that's to me a sign of a bit of exhaustion out there. Now, whether ultimately, from our perspective, people are considering the midterms, I think it's too early to really bake that into the equation right now. Now, Jim, you had mentioned interest rates, and we moved up to 3% on 10-year bond yields and then kind of pulled back in here once again. From my perspective, I still think we're going to close the year between 3, 3.25 on the 10-year bond yield in the States. And from my perspective, that's creating some fears and concerns out there. But I'm not worried as much about the absolute level as I am worried about the speed at which bond yields have been going up. The faster they go up, more likely it is that something is going to break. Earlier this year, we saw the break in the short volatility funds. And the worrisome part is that something else then turns around and breaks.
So when you see something rise rapidly like that, which surprised everybody, Craig, what about the idea of some kind of financial mishap occurring somewhere? Because we know that, for example, with quantitative easing, a lot of zombie companies were kept alive. They were able to roll over their debt. Now we're seeing problems arise in the retail sector. For example, Toys R Us had difficulty rolling over its debt. Now it's in bankruptcy. What are the chances that we have some kind of financial crisis or mishap somewhere that shakes the market's confidence?
Well, Jim, you're echoing a message that I've been thinking about for quite some time. Earlier this year, we were talking about 10-year bond yields, and we were talking about the danger zone between 260, 270. And if you start breaking through there, you're reversing a 36-year downtrend in rates, and you're likely to see this momentum response and rates go up quickly. Shortly after that actually did occur, you had the short volatility funds blow up. I still think that with all the financial engineering that has occurred over the last 10 and 20 years in here, and the fact that we haven't seen a rising interest rate environment since basically the late 1970s and up until 1980, because rates did peak last in 1981. So to me, the odds of rates slipping, moving too far too fast, could potentially lead to some problems. I agree with you 100% on that. And Jim, I'd also just add, as I look around at markets at this point in time, if we do start seeing an easing in bond purchases from the ECB, maybe at that point in time, rates do start to rise. Because what's been holding the long end of the curve down in the States, as I've traveled around Europe here over the past week, I hear pretty consistently that, you know, foreign buying of our debt, because the sovereign yields over in Europe are so much lower than where we are in the States, that that's really what's holding the long end of the curve down here in the United States. So that easing in buying very well could lead to a quick rise in rates, and that would be the problem. And as we've seen in the past, whether it's in 1984 or 1987, with the problem you saw with portfolio insurance, or in 2013, all these issues were caused by rates moving up too far and too fast. So 100% on board with you, Jim, that is a problem we need to watch.
Another area that looks like it could be problematic, I'd like to get your views on this, and that is technology has been at the forefront. It's been the leading sector in this market rise that we've seen over the last year and a half. And when we had the big correction in January, Craig, technology bounced back, and it was the first to recover and actually went on to achieve a new high. If you look at XLK, the ETF on technology stocks, It's been having difficulty, and what really struck me is all of the FANG stocks reported spectacular earnings. And let's talk about Apple. Not only did they report higher revenues, higher earnings, but they also announced a $100 billion stock buyback, the largest in history. Craig, it's not doing anything for these stocks. So is that another sign of trouble?
Absolutely. And Jim, that's been the leadership. The FANG stocks, call it FANG with a double A, has been the leadership of this market for years now. And the fact that these generals, which have become a very large part of the overall NASDAQ composite, in fact, at last count, Apple, Amazon, Netflix, and Google have represented a third of the entire NASDAQ composite. Jim, that's close to 2,600 stocks. And having that kind of concentration and the fact that you're seeing just big numbers getting blown out on Netflix and Amazon and Apple, and we can't see the stocks, you know, move forward and take another leg up, that's a concerning sign of exhaustion to me, and a sign that some of these stocks, specifically Netflix and Amazon, that have gone parabolic, they need to correct further, and they need to correct back toward their 200-day moving averages. And for a lot of these names in the past, Amazon specifically, you've seen 20-30% corrections back to support, and it has been just that, a correction back to support. But at this point in time, those names are such a large part of the NASDAQ, and they're so correlated with the S&P 500 that I think it would be very difficult for those names to go into some sort of correction mode without taking the broader market down with it. I think it would ultimately be healthy, and giving up some of that leadership role, perhaps broadening out into other areas, would probably be a very healthy thing to have happen in the market, Jim.
I want to talk about one sector that seems to be going in the opposite direction of the rest of the market, and that's energy. Craig, up until January, energy stocks were following the price of the commodity itself. But then after that correction, the energy stocks were showing a lot of weakness, even though the commodity was doing well. That has reversed lately, with the energy stocks pulling in some very strong performance, in fact, leading the market. I'd like to get your take on energy here.
Well, Jim, the two sectors that have led so far off of the February lows were tech stocks and energy. And on the unweighted side, it was energy that led specifically, one of the best performing areas. As I look at energy, I clearly see the divergence, as you mentioned, between the underlying oil commodity and also the stocks. The stocks haven't been going down anymore, and they've been going sideways and basically building bases. From my perspective, if we're going to see some profit-taking in the FANG stocks and really are resetting the expectations, these big long-only portfolio managers need to put their money somewhere. And if they're looking for escalators lower, not elevators lower, I think you can look at the energy stocks and say, pretty interesting, the divergence between the commodity and the stocks, and the fact that the valuation on energy across the board is now below the median level it has been at since 1984. So it looks like a pretty reasonable place to go. And on top of that, Jim, if we're going to see the economy pick up and gain momentum, we're likely to see a pickup in driving. And a pickup in driving means that we'll likely see the refiners do better. And as I go through and look at all these stocks, the refiners are looking better. The E&Ps are looking better. In fact, Jim, we published a note just the other day looking at energy as a whole and calling out things like Hess and Anadarko and Marathon Oil. Noble Energy is some of the more constructive-looking energy names out there. I think portfolio managers are going to gravitate toward this, Jim, because it's been an out-of-favor space that they haven't been into for quite some time.
Craig, usually as you get towards the end of a business cycle, you see this shift in leadership you're referring to here. And at the end of the business cycle, you see a pickup in inflationary expectations, which we're seeing. The ISM report came out. And if you look at the prices paid component, that's been rising for months on end now. And normally towards the end of the cycle, you see commodities pick up. Are you seeing that elsewhere, not just in energy? In other words, other commodities, are they doing as well as energy?
Jim, terrific question. And the answer in short is yes. As I go and do all the deep relative strength work comparisons that we do across the market, you know, it has led us to be overweight energy. It's led us to be overweight basic materials. And also, we're still overweight tech, but it's more of the old guard in tech, the Microsofts of the world, the Adobes, and those kind of names. So I do definitely think that we are transitioning from the mid part of the cycle to the latter part of the cycle where the commodity complex should work. Definitely seeing that happening in our relative strength work, seeing it in the charts. If I go through and I look at things in basic materials like aluminum, steel, I'm seeing meaningful multi-year downtrend reversals in these areas of the market. I'll also tell you, from a sentiment perspective, talking to institutions throughout Europe, throughout the U.S., there's not much attention thus far, a pretty small part of most benchmarks, but they definitely are picking up, and these are areas where I think you could derive some meaningful alpha.
Craig, something that is an old adage on Wall Street, sell in May, go away, come back after Labor Day. Certainly over the last couple of years, it didn't work last year in 2017 or 2016. Is it looking like that adage will finally work in 2018?
Well, it's funny. I've had many meetings as I've been in Switzerland and in London seeing clients. This has come up in a lot of the meetings, so it's a terrific question. And what I think we need to put into perspective is that not only have you heard the sell in May, go away discussion in prior years, you've heard none of it. I've seen nothing of it in the popular press, and I've heard very little of it from other clients and other research folks. So I think given the lack of discussion about it, it probably raises the probability that it does surprise people will happen this year. But more importantly, when you go back and do some of the deep statistical work that we've done on seasonality, what you do find out is in the second year of a first-term president, you tend to see a sell in May phenomenon have a higher probability of occurring. And that's exactly where we are right now with President Trump. He's in his second year of his first term. So the analogy of a hop, a drop, and the pop plays out and rings more true than even before. So I do think the sell in May go away will be a phenomenon that will impact markets this year.
Okay, so sticking with the theme of hop, drop, and pop, we got a hop at the beginning of the year, and it looks like we're going through the drop. Craig, what, in your opinion, would create the pop? I mean, is it just, you know, we get a good enough correction in the market where stocks become of value, number one. Number two, the fiscal stimulus kicks in, and we get stronger economic growth. I mean, what would be the catalyst for the pop?
Well, trying to shine up the crystal ball to try to look forward from here, I think there's several things that could be the catalyst for the pop into year end. Number one, I would say as we progress through the year, we start to think about valuing stocks on 2019 earnings. So currently right now, you're looking for about $172 in earnings. And if those hold up and indeed become good numbers, stocks could look cheap, especially if we correct back toward 2325, 2350 on the S&P 500. So that'd be kind of number one. Number two is as we progress into the midterm election, if there's a turnover in Washington and you end up seeing more gridlock come into play, certainly Washington has always liked more gridlock and not getting things done. That has always been soothing to investors that there won't be a lot of changes. So that could be a second thing that could potentially lead to a little bit of the pop. And then third, I would just say, if we do start to see a meaningful pickup in GDP growth, that could be another rationale for why we could get that pop coming into the end of this year.
Let me throw a possible negative out there. We have all of this stimulus coming into the market. We're seeing it reflected in corporate earnings with the cut in corporate tax rates. We've got tax stimulus. We have $300 billion of additional government spending. So all of that is going to be positive for economic growth. On the other side of the equation, Craig, we've got a Fed that is raising interest rates, and the latest speculation coming from some governors is that they may possibly raise rates four times this year. What about the impact of rising interest rates, especially on the short end, which is going to make it more expensive to borrow?
Well, Jim, let's take that point you're making in terms of rate increases at the short end of the curve. We also have to take into consideration that we're not seeing the long end of the curve coming up because there is so much differential or a delta between foreign sovereign debt and U.S. sovereign debt levels, in terms of yield, I should say, to be clear. So given that we're so attractive, we're seeing more foreign buying of our debt holding the long end of the curve down. If they're going to raise rates three or four more times a year, you're going to get very close, if not inverting the yield curve. From my perspective, I don't think the Fed is going to invert the curve. I think they will understand what the negativity of that ultimately means if they were to go and invert the curve. So I think you're going to see one of two things happen. You're either going to see an easing in buying by the ECB leading to a gradual rise in the long end of the curve and a resetting of bond investors' expectations, or you're going to see fewer rate hikes come through. But I'm certain that the Fed governors understand the meaning of an inversion of the yield curve. I don't think they're looking for a recession here. The economy is not really that strong. We haven't seen enough job growth and enough wage inflation at this point in time. So a little bit lower on my list.
So maybe another catalyst, Craig, would be that all of a sudden, maybe in the FOMC statement, they come out and it's a little bit more dovish and they back off from the stance that, you know, full steam ahead, we're going to keep raising rates. Is that a possibility if we see maybe some weakness in the economic numbers?
Jim, I think that's a very savvy point. I think that would play out that way. At this point in time, you know, given the sentiment, it's hard to distinguish, though, whether that is going to be truly taken as a positive or a negative. Because if they back off the rate hike increases, there would be some sort of admission that perhaps the economy isn't as strong as they had previously thought and slowing at the pace of the rate increases. That's going to be a fickle question to try to really have the market digest. But I would think in terms of a hop, drop, and pop, that could be our catalyst. But again, a little harder, a little more fickle.
In conclusion, then, it looks like we're entering into the drop phase, or at least sell in May and go away. Craig, what would you be doing with money? If you had money to put to work, would you keep it in cash right now on the sidelines waiting for lower prices and take advantage of them? Would you be deploying some money into energy? What would you be doing as an investor?
Yeah, as an investor, I would do kind of a multi-step process. Number one, I'd be looking to reduce the overall beta of one's individual portfolio and holdings to kind of slow the pullback and slow the decline you might see in your portfolio. The second is, if there's some extended positions you got great gains in, it never hurts to take some profits. And having a little bit of cash in one's portfolio is not always a bad thing. So keeping your powder dry, and Jim, that's what we called our April Informed Investor publication, keep your powder dry. So having a little bit of cash and then also taking some of the descendant stocks off the table would be some of the action steps that I would take now to protect profits for one's portfolios.
Well, listen, Craig, as we close, if our listeners would like to follow the great work you guys do at Piper, how could they do so?
Jim, they can feel free to send me an email. It's craig.w.johnson@pjc.com, and I'd be happy to forward some work along.
Everyone loves the stock market when it's going up. Making money in the markets, when you think about it, seems easy, which it is when you're in the middle of a bull market. But stocks, as you well know, don't always go up. And there are times when they can go down, in fact, go down a lot, which is why you need to have an investment strategy to help you navigate the good times along with the bad. Not everyone has an investment strategy, and quite honestly, many of you don't. That is where Financial Sense Advisors can help. We can put together an investment strategy to help you navigate those volatile investment markets in good times and bull markets and the bear markets that follow.
Call Financial Sense Advisors now and let us help you to make the change from just retiring to thriving in retirement. Call now, toll free, 888-486-3939. Again, that's 888-486-3939. Investment advisory services offered through Financial Sense Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor.
In case you didn't know it, the Financial Sense NewsHour is more than just our weekend show. We also have a weekday program featuring key economic experts, which is only available to our premium members. Here's part of one of the interviews from this last week.
If a pension fund needs 7-8% to break even, how can they buy a 10-year bond at 3%? They're locking in a guaranteed loss. You got CalPERS, which is, you know, the biggest in the states, behind the eight ball. California is talking about raising taxes to bail out CalPERS. And I can tell you what's been going on behind the curtain. California, Texas, there's been a number of states that are lobbying in Washington to try and seize 401ks. They're just going to take money from the private side to pay off the public side. That's it. Instead of solving problems, all they want to do is lobby for Band-Aids all the time. So the Fed is raising interest rates, not because of the economy, because it's overheating. They're raising rates because they know they have to normalize them because all the pension funds throughout the states are going belly up.
Come Coming up next, Frank Holmes, CEO of U.S. Global Investors. How is Bitcoin affecting gold investments? That and other subjects coming up next as the Financial Sense News Hour continues at financialsense.com.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertised with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.